a case being heard via Zoom, and so for the purposes of our audio recording, which will be archived and made available to others to listen to, please remember to identify yourself. For the record, if there are any technical issues, just let us know, or if you can't hear any of us, you know, or any other issues. Otherwise, our high-tech timer should be in one of the boxes on the screen. So if you have trouble with that as well, just let us know. And otherwise, let's get started. So this is our third case on the oral part of our calendar this morning. It's the State of Minnesota versus Leonard Stephen Sanchez. And it is appellate case number A20-0136. And Mr. Axelson, go ahead. As you know, you've got 15 minutes with 5 minutes for rebuttal reserved at the end. All right, please go ahead and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Devi Axelson and I represent the appellant Leonard Sanchez. Mr. Sanchez's conviction for possession of ammunition by a felon must be reversed because the state failed to prove both prongs of the circumstantial evidence test. First, the state failed to establish that Mr. Sanchez exercised dominion and control over the ammunition that was found in common areas of a trailer home he shared with multiple people. The Supreme Court said in Lorenz, and I'll quote, "The mere fact that a defendant is one of two or more occupants of an apartment does not justify convicting the defendant of possessing controlled substances found in the common area of the apartment." Additionally, this court has said in Smith that knowledge that something illegal is in your presence is not enough. You have to establish that the state has to establish that the person exercised dominion and control over those items. And here, we don't have any evidence of that. All the state has here is that Mr. Sanchez lived in this trailer home. These items were not found in his bedroom. They were not found in a dresser or a sock drawer. It was not found in a man's coat. It was not found in a gun safe where no other people lived in the residence but Mr. Sanchez. I'm providing other examples of circumstantial evidence cases where courts from our state have found that that's sufficient to establish that the person exercised dominion and control.
Mr. Axelson?
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry.
So
the jury acquitted Mr. Sanchez of stealing tools, and I understand that he testified that Mr. Songram had given him permission to sell anything in the home in order to buy propane. So I gather that one of the circumstances proved is that, I mean, given the jury's acquittal, that Mr. Songram in fact gave your client permission to sell anything in the home. Do you agree with that?
Well, I don't necessarily agree that, you know, I think there's a Montramini case that's either from this court or the Supreme Court that says you can't look too much into what an acquittal means in a case because jurors, for whatever reason, you know, may find an acquittal in a case. So,
well, I know, but we have to look at what was reasonable. I mean, the state tried to convict your client of selling, of theft. And the basis was he took property that wasn't his and he sold it. And his defense was, no, I had permission to sell these things, that Mr. Songram actually gave me permission to sell anything in the property. And by the way, even if there wasn't an acquittal, we have to infer the facts and the circumstances proved not based upon speculation, but based upon the evidence that was presented. My question is, given the fact that your client presented that to the jury, that I was given permission to sell anything in the home, and given the fact that Mr. Songram had left the home, don't we automatically exclude Mr. Songram then? At least don't we assume that there is at least joint possession of the personal property left by Mr. Songram in the home?
I wouldn't agree with that, Your Honor. I would say that there's circumstances proved are that Mr. Sanchez assumed possession over the tools, and he assumed possession over those tools, and he accepted possession over those tools based on what Mr. Stromgren testified to.
Right,
by bringing those tools to the store. I don't agree.
Well, hold on, though, just a second. It's true that that's what he acted on, but at the point that this is sort of one of those weird situations where when Mr. Sundgren lived in the home, it made a lot of sense to assume that everything that was in his home was stuff that he had dominion and control over. But once he abandons the home and says, I'm not going to live here anymore, and maybe even then you don't have anything further to assume about your client's power and dominion and authority over the items. But your client said that I had permission. I was given permission to sell anything in the home. Doesn't that mean that he had the authority over every personal bit of personal property in the home? Whether he exercised it or not, didn't he at least have the authority based upon his own testimony?
Well, I don't necessarily agree, I guess, with that point. I think that, and I also, I don't believe that Mr. Stromgren abandoned the home. Mr. Stromgren still owned the trailer. Mr. Stromgren still had keys to the trailer. Mr. Stromgren continued to go to the trailer, although he went less frequently after his wife passed. But I think that him offering Mr. Sanchez to sell things in the home in order to pay for propane would provide Mr. Sanchez with the opportunity to decide which things he would want to take possession of to then sell for money for propane. And one of those things he took possession of and exercised dominion and control over was the tools that he sold at the secondhand store. I don't think that, go ahead, Your Honor.
Oh, okay. So Mr. Axelson, so this was a jury verdict and he was convicted of possession of the ammunition. And so doesn't our case law require us to accept Mr. Stromgren's testimony that he never owned the 0.243 bullets, rifle bullets, I guess? I mean, don't we have to accept that and look at just the evidence that is favorable to the verdict? So with that admission, the only two other people then are Mr. Sanchez and Ms. Hutchinson, right? And so why doesn't joint dominion and control, I mean, why doesn't that answer the question here?
Well, Your Honor, I would agree with you. We don't argue in our brief that after the Mr. Stromgren's testimony and the jury's verdict, we don't argue that Mr. Stromgren possessed the bullet that was found in the home. Our argument, at least on the second prong of this, on the first prong of this, the state fails because Loren says that you don't establish joint possession just because multiple people live in the same home when something's found in a common area. On the second point of this, a reasonable hypothesis other than guilt is that either Mary Hutchinson possessed this bullet on her own, or that Miss Hutchinson or her mother, who we don't know her first name, but who lived at that property just a couple of months before that, before she died, may have possessed the bullet or the ammunition that was in that trailer. And then that was abandoned after she passed and nobody established dominion and control over that bullet at that point.
Well, so let me ask it this way. Constructive possession requires the jury to make certain inferences by definition. You're inferring various things. So when you look at the rational hypothesis standard, you're asking that asks this court to determine whether or not there are inferences from the circumstances proved that you could draw that are consistent with innocence, to put it in a positive way or affirmative way, and avoiding the multiple negatives in the way that we typically rephrase that. So the question, let me start with inference. Under constructive possession, this goes to your what you call the first prong. What is it that a jury is inferring? Are they inferring knowledge of the existence of the item and the location of it, or are they inferring something other than, are they inferring dominion and control, or are they inferring both?
Well, I think in this case, what they inferred based on the state's closing argument is
I'm not getting to this case yet. In a second, we'll talk about what circumstances we think are proved and what inferences to draw from those circumstances. But just as a theoretical matter, Constructive possession requires a jury to make certain inferences. What do you believe that requires a jury to infer?
I guess I can't totally answer that. I would say that in the cases that I've read, in order to prove a circumstantial exercise dominion control by circumstantial evidence, you need some piece of evidence establishing that the person has some link to that evidence, more so than what's current, that the person lives in that residence.
What is the knowledge requirement for constructive possession?
Well, we do know based on Smith that just knowledge that those items are in the home is not enough. So, I don't know if, specifically what the knowledge, I think maybe an intent to possess those items would be what's required. And that simply knowledge of those items being present is not enough, according to Smith.
So would the, in terms of the rational hypothesis test, the identified alternative hypothesis, could it be a lack of knowledge on Mr. Sanchez's part? And is that all that is necessary? In other words, we're looking for what inferences can we draw from the circumstances that have been proved that are consistent with the conclusion that Mr. Sanchez had no knowledge that the bullets were in the location that they were, right? So is that the inference that we are evaluating, a lack of knowledge on Mr. Sanchez's part, or is it even more specific? Because in your brief and what you just said to Chief Judge Siegel is that the alternate inference or the hypothesis is that either Ms. Hutchinson or her mother possessed. So is it enough to say lack of knowledge, or are we looking more than that and we are having to identify what inferences are consistent or what inferences can we draw based on circumstances proved consistent with Hutchinson possessed exclusively or Hutchinson's mother also possessed?
Well, I guess I would agree that if the state failed to prove knowledge here, that he doesn't even know the bullets or ammunition are in the apartment at all, that would be enough to win on the second prong of this. It would also potentially win on the first prong of this. But I think the bullet, at least, that was found by the front door, which was in kind of a mess of items, would potentially, there be an argument that he wouldn't know that those were present. The other items, I think, were on a TV stand, which was also quite messy and had some other items on it, but it would probably be a harder argument to make that he didn't have any knowledge of those at all. And that's why I relied on the fact that two other people lived in that trailer and that had not specifically said, and that either one of those people could have possessed those items. And the state doesn't have any evidence here that that number one, that somebody would jointly possess a bullet, or secondly, that he would jointly possess the bullet with either Mary Hutchinson or her mother in this case.
So let me follow up, because if what we're looking at is what inferences can we draw from the circumstances that have been proved, what inferences would be consistent with a lack of knowledge on Mr. Sanchez's part? Why don't you tell me what you think the circumstances that have been proved that would give rise to an inference of lack of knowledge on his part?
Lack of knowledge that the bullets are even in the
Correct.
Trailer?
Correct.
I guess I didn't specifically make that argument. But I would say that where the bullet was found by the front door and a mess of other items would potentially be an inference that he wouldn't know that that bullet was present in the trailer. I think the items that are on the TV tray, those are in a more of a common area of the household where a person would potentially see. And I think there'd be less of a strong argument that he wouldn't have knowledge that those items were in the trailer. And that's part of the reason why I argued that Smith says, this court said in Smith, that simple knowledge of something being contraband and being in the presence of that item is not enough to establish dominion and control over the item.
Just to be clear, though, as I understand your burden, your client's burden on appeal, it's your obligation to identify a reasonable hypothesis other than guilt. You've actually got to tell us what that hypothesis is. And you've given us a couple of hypotheses, but you haven't presented an argument that a lack of knowledge is a reasonable inference from the evidence that was presented. Am I correct in reading your brief that you haven't presented that argument?
I guess at this point, I don't totally understand the, you know, the path that both of your honors are going down.
Well, here's my, let me make it really clear. Correct me if you think I'm wrong on the standard, but my understanding is that the burden now is on your client to identify a specific reasonable alternative to the, to other than guilt.
Yes.
And offer that up and then identify evidence that would support that hypothesis. And my understanding in reading your brief is that you've identified a couple of hypotheses you're asking us to consider. But one of those, but neither of those is that your client lacked knowledge, that there's some inference that we can draw that this alternative theory is that he, the innocent theory is that he lacked knowledge of the presence of the bullets.
Well, yes, that is not my specific argument that he lacked knowledge of the bullets being present.
So what is the evidence that supports either of the hypotheses that you have offered? You've suggested, well, maybe mom, who's now passed away, it was hers, the bullet was hers. Or maybe it was the girlfriend or fiance phase, Ms. Hutchinson's, it was hers. What evidence is there in the record to support either one of those, since we're not allowed to speculate about what theories the jury might have considered?
I believe I'm out of time. Is it okay for me to answer this question?
Yeah. Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. First,
briefly,
I would say
you will have the 5 minutes also. So just very briefly.
Thank you. I would say first and foremost, you know, if you look at the Kinnear case, there was also no evidence in that case that the passenger in the truck with Mr. Kinnear possessed the drugs that were thrown out of the window of the truck. But this court felt that that was enough, that the person was present in the truck with another person and that one of them was responsible. And because the state couldn't prove which one of the two was responsible, that was a reasonable hypothesis other than guilt. We have that exact same situation here with Mary Hutchinson and Mary Hutchinson's mother. And then the second thing I would add is that if you think that the evidence is too speculative on the reasonable hypothesis other than guilt, then I went on the first prong of this test because then the evidence is also too speculative to establish that Mr. Sanchez exercised dominion and control over this ammunition simply by living in that residence. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Ms. Hansen, identify yourself for the record, and we did allow Mr. Axelson a couple of extra minutes. So if you need extra time, we would be lenient as well. Go ahead.
My name is Kristen Hansen, and I'm an attorney for the respondent in this case. And it's our argument that the evidence was sufficient to convict Mr. Sanchez of constructively possessing the ammunition. As stated earlier, the court has to take the circumstances proved, I guess, in favor of the verdict of guilty in this case. And the state's witnesses, basically the circumstances proved in this case were that Mr. Sanchez lived with his girlfriend in that house from September to December alone, that they had agreed that they were going to take, control of the premises for Mr. Stromgren while he wasn't there and watched the place, that there was no ammunition or guns in that home when Mr. Stromgren moved out. The state believes that that was proven at the trial, as Mr. Stromgren was a felon, that he had stated that he hadn't had any of that in that home since 2012.
Well, hold on one second though. I think looking at Mr. Axelson's, Mr. Sanchez's reply argument, it is true that Mr. Songren said he didn't have any bullets in the home, ammunition in the home, but I don't know that there was any testimony about his deceased wife and whether she may have possessed bullets in the home.
And the testimony that I pulled out of it was that he did testify that when he was in jail and convicted as a felon, that he called his wife and asked his wife to remove all weapons and ammunition from the home, and that she did do that. And then the other evidence would be that nobody during this entire trial blamed or said that there were, that she did possess any guns or ammunition. It's my understanding that Mary Hutchinson testified that there was none in there, that she knew he was on probation and that nobody could, or that he could not possess it. And so there was no evidence to the other side that she did possess it.
Well, but by your rationale, you're saying that, well, it's not, you can't infer that Mr. Strongin possessed the ammunition because he's prohibited. But of course, your whole case is built on the fact that Mr. Sanchez possessed the ammunition, though he was prohibited. So I'm not sure how you get to a circumstance proved simply because someone was a felon and possessed, was a felon, that Mr. Songram in particular, that he somehow could not have had the ammunition in the home.
To me, or to the state, that's just one of the pieces of evidence that we believe the jury believed that there wasn't any in there, that the verdict obviously goes towards the testimony from Mr. Stromgren and how there wasn't any in there. However, you can state that Ms. Hutchinson also had lived there for a long time on and off and knew that he couldn't and that there wasn't any in there. And even though Ms. Hutchinson could legally possess, she still denied of there being a presence of any ammunition or guns in that home.
Well, she denied it at first, and then she didn't deny it in the end. So I'm trying to get a sense of why this, is it implausible that Ms. Hutchinson possessed, exercised dominion and control over the ammunition and not Mr. Sanchez? And what is the evidence that would make it more likely that Mr. Sanchez possessed the ammunition rather than her?
Basically, the fact that she did not take possession of or ownership of it at all during the whole trial, even though she could possess it. She denied, knowing anything about it being there. And that, you know, the evidence showed that the primer and the bullets were in plain view on a TV stand where presumably everybody watches TV. And so, you know, whether both of them knew about it or one of them knew about it, she could possess it and strongly said she did not possess it and did not know anything about it.
Wasn't the evidence ambiguous on whether she, well, I shouldn't say ambiguous, didn't it cut both ways? Wasn't the fact finder aware of her representation to law enforcement that, okay, it's hers?
The circumstances, during the trial, she testified during the trial that it wasn't hers. And then the state asked her on, rebuttal or cross-examination about whether she had told them that it was hers. And she stated that she only told them that was hers because Mr. Stromgren didn't take possession of it. But then she still stated that she didn't know it was there and it wasn't hers. She was just trying to take ownership of it, is what the evidence will show. But she still, during testimony, stated that she did not know it was there. She was just trying to take it so that he, Mr. Sanchez, would not get in trouble.
Am I correct that this was a relatively short period of time, a matter of, I think, 3 months from the time that Ms. Hutchinson's mother died and the events giving rise to the charge here?
Yep, it was September 15th to she died, and then this was December 7th.
And Mr. Songer moved out after she died at some point. Do we know how long after she died that he moved out?
At the same time that she died is what the evidence showed. That he then asked them if they would take care of the place. And he moved to town, and shortly after she died, he had gotten a driving after cancellation charge and then wasn't able to go out to the residence unless somebody brought him after that, is what the evidence showed.
So does the circumstances does the circumstantial, I'll try to get my grammar right here, the circumstantial evidence require us to be able to infer that Mr. Sanchez knew the ammunition was there? So he moves into somebody else's trailer. There's clutter. We all get house blind. I mean, is that knowledge? Is that part of what we need to find, whether it's through circumstantial evidence or otherwise?
As stated earlier, I believe it wasn't brought up in the appellant's motion because, as you state, I mean, it's in plain view. And it's in, on a TV stand. There was evidence that this place had been cleaned up. Miss Hutchinson said she'd cleaned and there was nothing anywhere. So knowledge, I believe, wasn't brought up because it can be inferred since it was in plain view where it could be seen by anybody. We also believe that the inference is stronger for the fact that he constructively possessed it because he was home. He was also home when it was found. And that they would, and again, that they were in plain view. And again, because Ms. Hutchinson, who could possess it, said she did not possess it and did not even know it was there.
Ms. Hansen, can you remind me what the verdict said about which bullets or the, I suppose it's, it's like a casing and then there's primer, right? Or what was found? And
there,
what counts
there was no,
did the jury come back jury, with regard to which?
No, not specifically.
Okay, so it's possible that the jury verdict is not related to what was found on the TV?
It's possible, but the big box of primers were found on there and primers is part of ammunition. So I would not infer that. Based on the verdict?
The primers were found on the TV stand or just the case?
Yes, a box of primers.
The box, okay.
Yep. Do you want me to list exactly what was found or?
No, I think it's okay. The three things. Okay. Yeah, yep.
Yeah, they did not specifically state which was found. And the state believes that this was proven and there was enough evidence and that there is no other reasonable inference other than guilt in this case. The judge stated what needed to be proven in the jury instructions and that the two hypotheses that the appellant brings up was, again, either the girlfriend did it or the mom did it. There may not be evidence that mom didn't do it, but there absolutely is no evidence that, we're talking deceased mom, had any possession of anything. Nothing brought up in this trial had anything to do with that, except for when Mr. Stromgren testified that he had her take it all out before he got home from jail in 2012. And so, the fact that the girlfriend, Ms. Hutchinson, states that she had no knowledge of it. And again, even though she could, no knowledge of it whatsoever. And the fact that obviously there's absolutely no evidence that deceased mom had it. You know, we believe that there is enough evidence from the circumstances that were proved in favor of the verdict to convict him of constructively possessing.
I just saw Judge Ross. Can you hear? No. So let's pause a minute and see if we can't fix the issue.
I'm reconnected.
Do you remember the last thing you heard from me?
I could hear you all the way up through the point where I had sent in a message to the chief and she indicated that I needed to leave. So I could hear you and the question and answer, it was just somewhat garbled, but I got your argument.
Okay.
But it, but my connection was obviously failing. So I think we're back on now, and I apologize for the technical delay.
Not your fault. The wonders of our current situation. So I've got a question for you. With respect to the items that were in plain view, isn't that a little inconsistent with Ms. Hutchinson's testimony that she didn't know they were there, that there was nothing there? I mean, how do we deal with that inconsistency, but yet conclude that there was enough evidence because they were in plain view that Mr. Sanchez had dominion and control over them?
I believe that the jury didn't believe her in that testimony is okay. What we would say to that is they didn't believe that she did not know it was there.
So we would set that aside because it's inconsistent with the verdict.
Yep. And the state, I'm pretty much done with my argument, except for just to reiterate that the two hypotheses drawn from the appellant were not reasonable, unless you're going to say it was joint possession between the two because she lied and said she didn't know about it when she did, because she could have taken responsibility for it and she didn't. So this we don't believe that the hypotheses are reasonable.
I don't know if you can hear me. You're a little garbled. Yep. I can hear you. Hopefully I'm clear. Yep. I'm a little twisted in your argument a bit. Your position is that the jury, one of the circumstances proved is that Ms. Hutchinson didn't possess the bullet or the ammunition because she said so. It seems to me that also defeats your position, argued at trial, the state's position at trial, that it was the ammunition may have been jointly possessed between Mr. Sanchez and Ms. Hutchinson. It seems as if, correct me if I'm wrong, but all you're left with is the possibility, if you accept what you're asking us to accept, was a proved fact, which is that Ms. Hutchinson didn't possess it, which is that Mr. Sanchez must have solely possessed the ammunition, and that there is no option for joint possession because Mr. Sundgren says the ammunition wasn't his, and there is no evidence that it was the deceased mother's, and Ms. Hutchinson says it wasn't hers. So it seems to me that your joint possession theory is just evaporated. Correct me if I'm wrong about how I'm approaching that.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. And we don't know what the jury believed or didn't believe. And I'm looking at it as that they believed the state's witnesses and didn't believe her, but maybe believed her on some. I mean, we don't know what the jury was thinking. My argument is that it's inferable that they believed it wasn't hers. And I don't know if that's because she said that or just because she didn't take credit for it, but in the verdict, you know, most favorable to the respondent was the fact that they did not find that it was hers, but they found that it was his.
Right. But your point was, when I asked you the question, what evidence is there? Why is it more believable?
You're very quiet, Judge Ross. There maybe jiggled something.
I can't hear him.
So I can't be heard?
Now I can.
Okay. So earlier, Ms. Hanson, I had asked about why it's not reasonable to conclude that the ammunition was Ms. Hutchinson's. And you said that a circumstance proved was that it wasn't hers because that was her testimony and the jury must have accepted that. If that's so, then it could not have been joint possession. It must have been possessed only by Mr. Sanchez. Correct? If you want us to accept that a circumstance proved was that it wasn't jointly possessed between her and him, and that it wasn't possessed by her at all, we have to accept that the circumstance proved was based upon her testimony. that she didn't possess it at all.
Possibly. Obviously, we can't get into the minds of the jury, but the state believes that it's either or. I mean, if they didn't believe her, then they thought she had knowledge of it, then they figured that it was joint possession. If
that's
they did believe her.
Either or. My problem is with your either or argument. You're saying that a circumstance proved is that she did not possess it because she testified to that. So we have to accept that the jury accepted that she did not possess the fire, the ammunition.
So then the inference is that he is the only person that possessed it.
Right there. That, my point is that seems to be the only possible scenario that's consistent with the state's argument based upon what the state is saying is a circumstance proved.
And I would say there's another...
Go ahead, Judge Brian.
I would say there's another inference to draw from that. As I've discussed previously, as Judge Siegel said, if she didn't see it, then one other inference that would be consistent with that evidence is that he didn't have knowledge either.
Right, and I think that's a great argument, and I'm curious what Ms. Hansen's response to it. My concern is that what I was exploring with Mr. Axelson, which is that wasn't a hypothesis that was presented as a possible reasonable innocent hypothesis that we ought to consider.
And my inference from everything that happened would be that the jury did not believe her, that it was there and that they both would have seen it. That they did not believe that she didn't know it was there because it was in plain view on a TV stand. And she'd also testified that she cleaned in front of the door before she left that weekend and that there was no bullets there. And then all of a sudden there's bullets there. So
I guess my problem is just the inconsistency with your position that the only evidence that would support the idea that she jointly possessed it, or the only evidence that would defeat the idea that she was the possessor and not Mr. Sanchez is that she testified that it wasn't hers. And that to me, because that's the only piece of evidence, also defeats the possibility that it was jointly possessed. And so
I don't necessarily agree with that because we don't know what the jury decided, whether it was joint or sole. We don't know if they decided she and him did or just he did. Okay. I see I've been out of time for a while.
Okay. I've dragged you over time because of my technical issues and my redundant obviating questions.
No problem.
My apologies.
All right. Thank you. And Mr. Axelson, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to reiterate, it's the state's burden here. And the Mr. Sanchez testified that he didn't have knowledge of these bullets in the same way that she did. She's the only person who on the state's question acknowledged that she did try to take ownership over the bullets. There's nothing like that for Mr. Sanchez. So if there is single possession here, dominion and control, the only evidence of that would be of Ms. Hutchinson possessing it. There's nothing like that for Mr. Sanchez. There's absolutely no evidence other than the potential inference that he maybe had knowledge that the bullets were in the trailer, which again is not enough under Smith and is not exercising dominion and control. There's absolutely no evidence establishing any possessory interest or dominion and control over these bullets that were found in the trailer in a common area of a place that's owned by multiple people.
If I could jump in and have you help me out here. I don't know how well you recollect the trial exhibits, but I'm looking at trial exhibit 12, which is the picture of the TV stand.
Yep.
And I'm wondering, I'm not very good at those Where's Waldo books. I'm trying to find what box of primers there is in this picture. And honestly, I don't see it. I see all kinds of other stuff, remotes and wires and plugs and paper plates and bottles of maybe lotion or something. I don't see this box of primers. Do you know what I should be looking at here?
So I don't have that exhibit in front of me. I have looked at some of the exhibits and the primer box is not as big as the prosecutor indicated. I think it's a smaller box, maybe about this size, although I couldn't really tell from the picture. But from the picture that I saw, and I don't remember what exhibit number is, it is a primer box. You can see it.
There is another exhibit at exhibit 11, which shows the box next to it, maybe a AAA or a AA battery. Yep. And it's about a little bit more wide than a AA or AAA battery is wide. But once you pull out and you look at the TV stand, I'm not sure what I'm looking at to see what was in plain view. And I was asking if you could help me determine that.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly. And my memory of the testimony, and I think the officer even acknowledged for the bullet that was found by the front door, is they don't know if things were moved in order to take the picture to establish where the bullet was, or if the officer actually did see those things in plain view. There was some testimony about plain view from when the officers came into the residence. I know there was the reference to the drug paraphernalia, and then at least one bullet or cartridge casing was seen on that TV stand by one of the officers, but I don't remember if they specifically referenced the casing or the primer box.
Do you agree that there's at least enough evidence to support the inference that your client knew that the ammunition was in the trailer?
Yes, I'm not contesting his knowledge of the fact that that these items were in the trailer. And I don't think I need to, based on the Smith decision and based on these other cases saying that just because you live with other people doesn't establish dominion and control over items. You have to have other evidence linking you to that evidence. So like in Lorenz, for example, there were drugs found in the common area, but Lorenz also had drugs in his bedroom. And so they said that was enough. We don't have that here. There's a Saliers case from the Supreme Court where a gun was found in a lockbox, but Saliers lived by himself. And so, you know, possession was established because he was the only person living there. You know, the state didn't say today, they didn't say in their brief, any evidence that established joint possession between him and Mary Hutchinson. And they don't establish any possessory interest by Mr. Sanchez of the bullets and the primers that were found in that residence. And simply knowledge of that is not enough to prove his guilt.
Recognizing that it is your burden on appeal to identify evidence, let's assume for a minute, leaving Smith aside, let's assume that we were hoping to find some evidence to support your reasonable hypotheses. Do you concede that there was no actual evidence from which the jury or we could infer support for the hypothesis that either the deceased mother or Ms. Hutchinson possessed the ammunition instead of Mr. Sanchez?
Well, there's probably the exact amount of evidence that the mother possessed the items found in the trailer as there was that my client possessed those items. They both lived at that residence, and we're talking about a short period of time between when she died and when these items were found.
Well, not so short, and we're talking about small. I mean, maybe a short amount of time if we're talking about a piano, but you know, she'd been dead for 3 months at the time that the police discovered the ammunition.
That's correct, but there's nothing in here to establish that she said, now these bullets are yours or anything else. And the testimony from Stromgren about how he got rid of his guns, there is no testimony about whether his wife possessed guns or possessed ammunition. It's the state's burden to establish that.
All right. Any further questions? Nope. All right. Thank you both for your written briefs as well as the oral arguments. They have been very helpful to us. The case is now submitted, and we will issue a decision within the statutory time period. And this now concludes the oral argument portion of our calendar today. And so thank you both.
Thank you.
We stand adjourned.